receiving third-hand photos of Watson sent from Jamie to you and then to me.
Yeah, if I'm a, I've been playing Minecraft with Paul lately.
Oh yeah,
Paul and a few other people. Yeah, I got a little server, and yeah, when I'm in here playing Minecraft, Watson is out there with her, usually watching TV. So she sends me pictures of Watson's face as he snores.
Does he drool at all?
No, just snores.
Not yet. He doesn't drool yet.
He does not drool, and he will not drool, because I don't like dog spit.
Wait, so let's talk about Minecraft for a second. This is like the second time in like a day that I've heard people talking about playing Minecraft again. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it has to do with just everyone being at home and playing games or what, but it feels like it's making a comeback. I mean, I don't know if it ever really went away, but it feels like I definitely see a lot more, even on Reddit. Like I've been seeing more posts about Minecraft stuff randomly.
Oh really?
Maybe it's that effect where you just start seeing things when you expect them, but
yeah, I mean, Paul never stopped playing it really. So when I worked at Octopus, we used to have a company server. It wasn't really like a company server, but we would, yeah, a lot of the people in the company would play on Paul's server basically. So, I think for Paul, it's like a relaxation thing. It's kind of a sort of a chill thing for him to do. And it also a creative thing for him to do. You can do some pretty complicated things in Minecraft with some of the recipes. You can really actually make like real machinery to sort of automate your business in Minecraft. So for him, it's sort of like a creative outlet. And anyway, he'd been playing it more recently, and I don't spend a lot of time playing games in the last maybe six, 8 months to the year now, but Minecraft has been fun recently. So I ended up getting a realm, and there's just been a few of us playing on it, like my brother and his wife and my nephew and Paul and some other people. So
that's cool. Yeah, you've been trying to get me on there. I've just been busy with other stuff, but which we'll talk about. But I do kind of want to go in and check it out and see what's new in the past 10 years.
I don't know. It can be really relaxing. And for me, it's more of a way to socialize with people. And, you know, the area I'm at right now is sort of under like self-quarantine, and it's also sort of compounded because
I
moved here.
In the game or?
No. In like Santa Rosa, Sonoma County rather is under self-quarantine. And like I imagine a lot of the West Coast is by now, or especially the Bay Area, but you know, moving here, not that long ago, don't really have any friends yet. Cause I don't really do, I've just been working and hanging out with Watson. So for me, it's more like time to hang out with people, I suppose. And some games you can play are really intense, so it's less about conversing with people you're playing with and more about doing the gaming activity and being good at it. Whereas something like Minecraft, you can be social and not, and like the gameness, if that's, you know, obviously it's not a word, but like the gameness sort of like falls into the background, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's interesting. I never really thought about that, but that's totally true. I mean, I remember when when we first started getting into it, we would just sit on the couch and watch each other play.
Yeah.
You know, like watching a Let's Play video on YouTube, except we would just take turns just hanging out on the couch and just Xbox 360 and just playing it with a controller. And it was, it was cool to just veg out and be social and antisocial at the same time.
It's also interesting to think about all the edge cases. So talking to my nephew about like critical thinking, right, and learning how to solve problems and think creatively around problems. And Minecraft is an interesting way to do that because it's, you know, it's a game. It's like a pretty easy to be introduced to a game at that. So when you start getting into it, let's say that you need some resources and you keep running out of them, you don't want to have to be sitting in front of the computer clicking around to get those resources. There are ways that you can automate that. And so people have gotten really, really creative in the different machinery they make. So one example is, and this might be news to you. No, actually, I might have talked to you about it a couple of days ago, but in Minecraft, you can you go through the Nether portal, you harvest these pearls, and then you can open a portal and there's like a final boss dragon type thing. You kill the dragon and then you can go to these different islands that are actually like really like thousands of blocks away from wherever your portal was. And you can find these wings there, and the wings allow you to sort of glide around like those Red Bull wingsuits. And then you can make fireworks, and you can use fireworks as sort of a rocket. So you can jump in the air and then launch with a rocket, basically. And so to make rockets, you have to have a lot of paper. To get paper, you have to have a lot of sugarcane. And you also have to have a lot of gunpowder. And to get gunpowder, you have to kill creepers. And creepers only spawn at night, and they're also dangerous. So people have designed these machines, like monster farms, basically, that exist in the sky. And you build them a certain way. And so if you do it right, monsters spawn on the machine. The machine has water that pushes them through a hole. They fall and die onto a hopper, which collects the gunpowder, which pushes the gunpowder into a chest for safekeeping.
Sean, this doesn't sound like a game anymore. This just sounds like work.
Yeah, kind of.
You're really not selling it.
But it's less intense than Factorio, for example. But anyway, so what I mean is like, It's fun to talk to my like 15-year-old nephew and be like, all right, well, here's a problem we have. Let's think about how to solve this and use the tools that we have in this game to solve it. And so it's teaching him about logic and critical thinking, which is, I don't know, it's good. I always like to, that was always really beneficial to me, like learning about programming and critical thinking and like how to solve problems like that when I was younger. So trying to put an educational spin on it, I guess, but apart from that, you could just like wander around and farm and hang out with your friends, I guess.
Yeah, that's it's pretty cool that the appeal to it is pretty universal.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, I'm not ashamed to say I've been playing Minecraft. Maybe less so to admit that I've played a lot of Fortnite, but it's been relaxing. I go through like seasons, I guess, and now it's like it's fun to just relax and talk about whatever with the people that are on the server.
Yeah, plus because just everyone else is home now and yeah, and just hanging out and not necessarily working.
It's been very interesting to me to observe, and I don't want to draw like a clear line between introverts and extroverts, because most people, very rarely are you truly an introvert or truly an extrovert. Most people, it's like a spectrum, right? You're sort of in the middle somewhere. And actually, I can recommend a really good book on this subject, the book called Quiet by Susan Cain. She talks a lot about introverts in a primarily extrovert-dominated world. And it's been really interesting on Twitter, watching a lot of the people that are new to working from home and a lot of people that are extroverted just sort of really struggle. And I don't mean it to be like entertaining, because I don't want to be entertained at their expense, but it's been not something I'm used to seeing. Like Paul was saying today, one of his coworkers was like, hey, everyone, I'm making lunch. Does anyone want to hop on a Zoom call so I'm just not alone here?
Bring out the old virtual water cooler.
Right. And, you know, I would be the type of person to like go to be by myself during lunch instead. So that's been a really interesting shift to watch online, as people sort of struggle with being from home a lot. And I saw a lot of people tweeting about like, oh, we're gonna see like a bunch of introverts realize they're not truly introverted. Again, it being a spectrum, but yeah, we might have to bring back the old water cooler and have some sort of, you know, online socializing happening during the week.
Yeah, it was definitely eye-opening to me to sort of see those reactions to it from other people and realize that I didn't really ever have that reaction. Like, I still kind of get stir crazy sometimes. I just got to get out of the house and do stuff, you know, get away from the office or whatever, but for the most part, like, I can be here and be productive and you know, get work done from day to day. And well, like you said, it's a spectrum, right? Mm-hmm. But I'd never really thought about that other people could struggle with that. And maybe that's kind of closed-minded, but like I just always assume, like, everyone always jokes about, oh, working from home is so great, you can just work in your pajamas or your underwear and no one's going to bother you and yada, yada, yada. But like, in practice, it's not, those perks are pretty minor compared to like just the reality of it. And, you know, you and I are used to it. We're adapted to it, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's fine, but yeah, I guess it just never really occurred to me that people could, that it could be challenging for people.
Yeah, I was the same way. I mean, I went through, so I was in the music world for a long time, and the music world especially in, if you're doing your own sort of music, you're going to be paired with extroverted people. That's just how it is. And so in the various bands that I played in, you know, there were introverted people like me, but a lot of the people were extroverted because that's what they're good at. Like, you know, the front person of a band has to be extroverted. They have to be entertaining, right? The guitar player, not so much, because they're looking at the lead singer, right? And that led to a lot of personal struggles for me, especially being younger and being headstrong, like not seeing how the other person perceives things or how they respond to things. Or really, it's just a fundamental misunderstanding. Like, I remember getting into conflicts with our singer, and I'd be talking to someone just venting. I'm like, I would say stuff like, I don't understand how they can possibly see things this way. And what I didn't understand was fundamentally, they're just wired completely backwards, differently than I am, you know? So it's interesting to think about those times now and look back and how I responded and how they responded and realizing that, oh, they're just a different personality type, right? I guess when you're younger, you sort of grow up thinking a lot of people are like you or think and approach problems the way that you do. Actually, reading that book that I mentioned, Quiet, helped me realize that I was wrong in many of those confrontations, because I was asserting that the way that I approach problems and things like that is the true, like the right way to approach problems. But it's been, it's really interesting to look back and think about that now.
Yeah, it's nice that you're able to have that, yeah, introspection. Some people wouldn't even bother with that part of it.
Yeah. I mean, it also helps too that I've worked with a few people that when they come in and they make everyone take like a personality test. So that was like a learning exercise. And then, you know, like you can share your personality test results with other people. And so then suddenly they can fundamentally understand like how you approach things, or maybe not fundamentally, that might be a little bit too intense, but sort of have a better picture into how you respond to things. Or like that way, if I'm coming to you and I know the basic traits of your personality type, I can analyze how I'm wording this email or wording the Slack message or something. I can sort of predict how you might perceive things that I'm about to say. And that's helped me tremendously throughout the last few years.
You're talking about the Myers-Briggs specifically,
yeah,
or
exactly,
just personality
yeah.
tests in general? Okay, yeah. I've been reading some things recently that's kind of, you know, oversimplified, and maybe the buckets that that test puts people in aren't great, but I did have a funny moment with my wife Jess where we both realized that we were the same type, you know, which is a INTJ.
Yeah, I'm actually looking through my inbox in Slack really quick to see if I can remember which one I am. I guess now I've been working with the same people for so long, and there's only a few people that I sort of just know like what will gaslight somebody and what won't. So I just try to avoid those things.
You're no fun.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about that stuff, especially now, like having more time. You know, I still go to the dog park and things like that, but now there's like the people at dog park don't want to hang out and talk. They just kind of go to the separate corners and their dogs do the thing.
It's kind of opposite. You come home to talk to people.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a... interesting times we're living in, though.
You know what I learned? Nobody wants pumpernickel bread. They'd rather starve than buy pumpernickel bread.
I don't know the last time I've eaten pumpernickel bread. Now, I do like a rye bread, especially with the Reuben sandwich. That's pretty good, but...
That's the thing, though. You go to the store, things left on the shelves. Pumpernickel bread, red kidney beans, and chunky tomato sauce.
You can make some good stuff with both of those. Who's out there buying smooth, like completely blend, like blitz tomato sauce?
I don't know, but I also realized that we have like $10 jars of tomato sauce that also no one was buying. I didn't even know they were there.
I basically only buy whole peeled tomatoes and some of like the bigger cans. Like I make my own sauces and things like that out of the tomatoes.
I need to get into that. It's not that hard, right?
No, it's really easy. It's like you use way less salt too, and you can transform the flavors a lot easier than you can like a pre-seasoned, pre-made sauce.
You just make a bunch and freeze it, or what?
Yeah, you could do that. Or you could eat it all. I don't know. One of the two.
All right, so what's been going on over there? I see something, some weird things in the show notes about recursive data structures and CTEs and materialized. What are you doing over there, dude?
Do you really want to know what I'm what's happening to? Well, it's less that what am I doing. It's more what's happening to me at this point.
Let's hear it.
So yes, the side pro or the side app, the new app that I'm working on under DK's umbrella. So Design Collective has, you know, it's an e-commerce store, so it has products and it has a taxonomy system, but the taxonomy system is really naive. I guess you could say simple too. That might sound less aggressive or putting down of the system, but so basically how it works is you have rooms, and a room might be like living room, dining room, bathroom, etc. And
outside is a room, apparently.
Yeah, and outside is a room. And then you have categories, and a category can belong to a room. A room can have many categories. So category might belong to living room. The category might be sofas, sectionals, stuff like that. That's all you got. Like, you got two levels. There's no referential relationships there. You got rooms and categories, and that's it. And then there's also tags, and tags have a type of material and color. You basically have three tables to sort of reason about these attributes that belong to a product, right? If you look around most e-commerce sites, like especially furniture related sites like Wayfair, Perigold, House, One Kings Lane, they're all sort of at least three levels deep. So you have essentially what I would call a department. So a furniture, outdoor, I would call those departments. And then inside of furniture, you have a second level, which would be living room, dining room, bathroom. And then you have the third level, which would be sofa, chair, table, sectional, right? In general, that's how I've seen manufacturers storing their information as well. They sort of have the categories or hierarchies or whatever you want to call it, relatively the same. So with this new project, I didn't want to just copy over DK's setup because it is relatively naive, and also it's pretty different from other pieces of data that we're going to be working with. And also, I guess probably the most important thing is that I did this exercise with Lindsay where I sent her a bunch of different pictures of products, and I said, all right, categorize each one of these. And every single time that she used the three level system.
That's great. Without even prompting
every single time. So I was like, okay, well, this is probably what we should do here is use a three level system. So that means that I could have three tables, you know, department, room, and product type. So anyway, I started looking around, like, how do people model this stuff? And I mentioned the last couple of weeks, I've been reading a book, and every time the name escapes me, but basically it's database, like, you know, common database design patterns or shapes for solving different problems. And one of the shapes seems to fit this pretty well. And it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with product taxonomies, although it could be used for that. But so what I'm doing with this new approach is I just have one table called category. And a category can have a type. So a type could be department, color, or material. And that's just an enum column. And then categories can also belong to other categories. And so that's where you mentioned like recursive data structure or like referential relationships on the table. Category can have a parent category ID, which is just a foreign key to another category, right? That's one way of solving the problem. And really after some research, I guess that's called an adjacency list. By using foreign keys directly to create that recursive structure, that's what people would call an adjacency list. It's pretty simple, like straightforward to make. You know, it's one single table, but it can make queries more difficult. So, let's say that you have the root level category of furniture, and furniture has a category called living room, and living room has a category called sectional. You know, showing that if you're on a product page, you can load a product's assigned categories. So in this case, a product might be assigned or belong to the category sectional. Then you have to do a query to load the next level up, and then you have to do another query to load the next level up, right? That's obviously not great. So Postgres actually has a thing for this called common table expressions, so you can actually do recursive queries. I'll put a link to this in the show notes. but you could essentially, via the common table expressions, in one query, you can get a categories, descendants, siblings, ancestors, any sort of way you need to chop those relationships up. You could do that with a single database query instead of N plus one for how many ever levels deep the association is.
Interesting. So you can define these things. They're basically kind of like functions that can call themselves. Is that true?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
I'm maybe oversimplifying it, but I don't even know what the syntax looks like here, but.
Well, so yeah, that's essentially what's happening. So if you have like a normal, SQL select, you might do like select star from products where name is something, right? So if you needed to do like a recursive thing, you could wrap that in a with recursive, and then you give that operation a name. So like with recursive, included products, and then you have as, and then you pass the select in there, but then you have to use a union, and the second select in there is the recursive part. So it is kind of intense to look at. Luckily for me, there's a good Elixir package called Arbor that sort of wraps this up for you, and it gives you functions that you can use to get like parent descendants. So you can actually pass it a level. So if you have 100 levels deep, you could say only show me the 50 descendants deep, for example. And that seemed to work pretty well for me anyway. So that's what I'm using right now anyway, is this adjacency list set up with foreign keys. But I'm running into an interesting situation here. And this is fresh on my mind because...
Well, hold on. Yeah, so before we get there, can you talk about some of the other options you considered and why you didn't go with... Like, why don't you just go with, like, flat tags? Or why didn't you just go with... Well, like, you mentioned categories, but they also have types? So, yeah, I don't know. We were kind of brainstorming some different ideas, and you ended up landing on this. But what else did you look at?
Flat tags don't feel right because there is an inherent hierarchy, whereas tags don't necessarily have a hierarchy. So that didn't feel quite right. Another option. Okay. So you mentioned like the type, right? So I wanted to sort of have all of this self-contained. And so I could have like category literally be basically just a product department, but category is an overloaded term. So I don't think that would work in this case. I'd probably have to make a different table that was more specific to product types or hierarchy specifically. But I also didn't want a second and third table for colors and materials, or have like a second concept for tagging. So, oh, the product categories dealt with this way, tagging is different, because that's what we have in Design Collective. And it leads to some just duplicated code, but it's also a separate thing to know about, I guess. When a category has a type, you could say the type is department, or it's a color, or it's a material. So you have three types of categories that it can be, and that's it. You don't have tags, you don't have second tables or second concepts, I guess. A category is what it is. So I guess I could rename category to tag in a way, but category feels more correct in this case to me so far.
Interesting. So things like color and material are not in that main sort of department tree.
Yeah.
Where you would sort of click and browse through products, maybe necessarily. Like, it's just kind of an additional tagging thing that is part of the same system. Okay, I didn't understand that. That makes a lot of sense now that you explained it.
Yeah, and I suppose if I'm thinking in terms of searching and joining too, if I'm not throwing Elasticsearch in the mix right away, that's one or two less tables that you have to join in if you want to do any sort of filtering and searching by color and tags on top of category.
Cool. Okay.
So yeah, and originally I had category type, the type of field on category. It was actually a separate table called category type, and I simplified it, just rolled it back down because I hated doing two queries every time. I needed to get down to the categories, but yeah, I mean, it's working well enough. I guess, are there any other like questions or like whys about why I'm using this adjacency list with categories so far?
No, I think it makes sense. I mean, the querying part is definitely the most tricky part, especially with recursive things, but with these common table expressions, I think that seems like it helps simplify that quite a bit. So
yeah, and I have a couple of validations. So like one edge case, or not edge case, one rule that I have is that a product can only be assigned to a leaf node category. And so when you're creating, again, like I think last week I described using basically put ASOC. If you have, if you put a category in that list to be assigned to the product, it will return you an error if it's not a leaf category. So I think that's also a UI concern too. Like it's up to the UI to not allow you to do that or not like allow that as an option to happen. Because we wouldn't want like a product to get assigned to the furniture department and nothing else, like deeper down, right? So that's sort of like one edge case, but that was a really easy ecto validation to add anyway. So we have a few validations sort of guaranteeing that products only belong to leaf nodes. And if like you move a leaf node, I can move all the assigned products pretty easily. It's not too complicated. It's just a little bit of plumbing to do, but it's not too complicated. And I really struggle with this decision too, because I could simplify it and make it a few different tables. And while that's simpler, it'd be simpler to reason about it. I don't know. It just doesn't feel quite right. I don't know. I can't really put my finger on it, but yeah. Anyway, so this is where we're at. We're at this adjacency list with categories. It's a recursive structure, but here's a fun part. So, I'm working on this importing system, and when a product is being imported via CSV, it has the hierarchy. So basically what this product, when it's imported, should be mapped to our hierarchy setup for categories, right? So imagine we have a hierarchy like furniture, living room, chair. And then we also have one like furniture, dining room, chair. And the CSV coming in has furniture, dining room, chair. So when we parse this CSV column, this is what I'm struggling with. How should we match that to our existing thing? So like the most naive approach you could do is parse that hierarchy list into a list, or parse the string into a list, take the last item and do a like or a plain text match in Postgres. So, okay, if the last item in the CSV field is chair, let's look for leaf categories in our system that are chair. We're going to return dining room chairs, and we'll also get living room chairs. We might also get living room accent chairs. So we're getting anything that has chairs in it on the leaf level, but maybe the CSV field actually specified it was a dining room chair, but we're matching all the different types of chairs. So that naive approach is out the window at that point, right? Which leads me to, you mentioned earlier, materialized paths, or L trees, as Postgres calls it. Just keep running into edge cases with this stuff, man. So if we look at a different approach for doing this, like that would be like materialized paths, or again, like I said, Postgres calls it an L tree. So with adjacency lists, again, it's foreign keys all the way down. With a materialized path, there's different ways to do it. Postgres actually has a native type for this called L tree, or a label tree is what it stands for. But essentially what you have is a column that could be a list of, or an array of strings, or it could be an array of integers, could be an array of whatever you want it to be. Or it could be a single string with like label dot label dot label, right? So there's some sort of delimiter there. And you would use that structure to denote your hierarchy. Does that make sense?
So just like a path to a file in a file system, right? You can get the relative name of the file, foo.txt, or you can get the absolute path. And that sounds like the materialized tree is kind of like the absolute path to a file on your file system.
That's exactly what it is.
Okay, cool.
So... So that has some drawbacks. I don't want to say a lot. It has some drawbacks. So like if you move your categories around, well, then you have to look at all the paths and fix all the paths.
Does the L tree thing calculate it for you, or do you have to update it yourself?
That's a really good question. I haven't gotten that far into the documentation. So I just started reading through the L tree docs before we got on this call. I mean, so the cool thing about this is that because Postgres has a native type for it, it gives you a lot of tooling sort of out of the box. So it has all these different types of matchers that you can do. I think you can even like coerce a string to an L tree. So, and this is what I was thinking, like if I switch to a materialized path or an L tree for this setup, I don't know that I want to do this just for this reason, but this could potentially make it so that I can match these CSV categories like more specifically to a, like a path. You know, if I'm getting categories as like, again, furniture, bracket, living room, bracket, chair, that means I could course that to an L-tree and do like an L-tree match on Postgres to see if we have something that's actually like matches the full path.
Good luck with the fuzzy matching on that. But that aside, yeah, now that I'm looking at this, yeah, that it actually seems pretty straightforward. Like you said, I think it's just an array of things, but it just gives you a bunch of helper functions to deal with that. And it probably indexes them smartly and stuff.
You can index them. Exactly. And it gives you functions that you can use for the fuzzy matching and stuff.
Hmm. Does sound cool.
But you inherit lots of problems. Like if you have to start moving stuff around, if you have to start reordering your paths or your categories, you have to do it. You have to, and again, this could be abstract. Like it could be a done deal. Like you do it once and it should just work, but you still have to do it. So
yeah, I feel like with Ecto and multis and stuff, you could make that happen pretty easily.
So there are actually two Elixir Ecto libraries, one for materialized paths and one specifically for L trees. So I might dig into those, but this is what is happening to me currently. is I'm figuring this
my
stuff
god
out.
Look at all these operators.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Postgres is an amazing thing. So by operators, he's talking about you're talking about all the built-in helpers. Yeah, so like you have an operator for like, does an array contain an ancestor of the L tree, or does an array contain a descendant, or does it contain any sort of like, you can even do you can even like match against specific segments in a path too. It does a lot for you. It does quite a bit for you.
I wonder if you could do a graph with this. Like, could you have an L tree that is recursive, like has a cycle and points to itself?
The database probably would just cease to exist at that point.
Black hole opens up.
It would just like, yeah, it would just zip itself into non-existence.
It would take infinite storage and no storage.
So that's what I've been thinking about today, like as of 20 minutes ago, as of I guess as of 38 minutes and 25 seconds ago. That's what I've been sort of thinking about. So how does all this strike you
in between that and your Minecraft machines?
Yeah,
I mean it's interesting because it's well-trodden territory. A lot of applications have this kind of structure, need this kind of thing, especially in the e-commerce world where those kind of 2, 3, 4 level structures are pretty commonplace. And, you know, you kind of, people designing the systems expect it. The customers browsing the systems expect that kind of hierarchy to be able to dig down and filter and drill through things. I was just on Monoprice today looking for things, and like, there's just so much, but like, you got to have some kind of hierarchy to get down there. Sometimes you don't even know really what that hierarchy is, but ahead of time. And You mentioned you couldn't really put a finger on, like you said, you could have just made a bunch of tables and like it would have been fine, but the tables would sort of be specific to your particular application.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fine for a lot of cases. Our inclination as developers is to write systems, write things that are generic, that we can reuse, that are applicable to lots of different applications. And this seems like such a natural fit for that sort of thing. It's like, oh, it's just a category, man. We want to nest them, and anything can be belong to any category, and we can create and remove them and move them around. And it's this thing that just mentally lends itself very well to this kind of pattern where you don't really care about the specifics of it, but you need it to function in a certain way, but also be able to fit any, you know, how your business moves forward and be able to fit those extra use cases. Maybe in the future you're going to have 4 nested you know, things in your tree. Like, well, what would you do if you only had 3 tables? It is challenging, but I also just want to say that it's really, you're spending a lot of time thinking about it and looking at all the options. I think that's really important, because once you pick something, you're really stuck with it. Like it starts to, its tentacles start to go into every little part of your application when something like this was such a core feature. So it's good to get it right.
Looking at Design Collective, if I go into the accessories, room. There's like wall decor. Wall decor, I don't think I would, I wouldn't. So there's like inside of accessories, there's wall decor, there's pillows, which should probably be elsewhere. There's pottery. And so it's sort of like you end up having a sort of junk drawer of a category or a room with that sort of setup, right? Like we can't add a new concept for it again, because like you said, once you go there, it's, it, that's what you have. So, and that's another reason why I was sort of steering clear of that approach with this new project, is because I don't want to have this sort of junk drawer category where stuff just goes. And especially in thinking about this, this side thing, like the data is the most important thing about it, because we're keeping track of it for vendors, but also these designers. So this is like, this is part of like a really, it's not a sort of implementation detail. Oh, we have to have a way for people to find products. It's, this is a way for us to be able to keep sane, keep things in order. Right. So that's sort of why I wanted to approach it and see like, is this more complicated approach like worth it? And so like early on, like talking to Paul about it, he obviously knows about Design Collective, and he's like, as far as I know, Design Collective has no need for a recursive structure. And then that's where, you know, so I went back and was like, all right, Lindsay categorized all these things for me. And then did more looking around. And it turns out that, yeah, actually like this probably is better for this new project to use this more complicated approach. But yeah, you're right. And really that's why I'm taking my time with this, is because I could probably just force a way for it to work with this category matching stuff, right? But I would rather spend a couple of days, get halfway down the road and be like, okay, now let's go in and try the other one and see which one really is the best approach here.
And I got to say, I really, now that I understand how your category types work, I think that makes a lot of sense. It gives you another dimension of flexibility here, right? You're sort of, the core reason for doing this categories was for the quote unquote department types, right? Where you're, the ones you described him before, you know, outdoors or furniture, outdoors, chairs or whatever. Those are your departments, right? But also being able to use the exact same system and prevent that code duplication for other types of metadata that you want to tack on to your products. I think that's really powerful.
And I wanted to be able to have one context that has a bag of functions for categories that could work across the board. So maybe eventually we add another category that's more for internal business reporting, and you could add those reporting types of categories to certain products and generate reports based off of those categories. You know, that was something that I read in the book that I would never have thought of in a million years. I would have created a separate context or entity to handle that. But that, like, at its base, that's what a category is, right? It's like groupings, and you should be able to, or rather categories in my mind used to always be about where this thing belongs in a house, because that's what, how Design Collective was designed when I got it, right? And now I'm thinking about a category is just a grouping of products, whether it is about where they belong in a house or whether it's about what billing department or what vendor wants a report on a certain set of products, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Or it could even be like, hey, this vendor had a sale on this subset of products. Let's track the performance of that sale and just create a category just for that one particular sale.
Exactly. So
spring 2020, whatever company sale products, and that's a category. And, you know, you never be able to see it on the front end, but it's just like a, it's just metadata, I guess.
I mean, that's exactly why they have a type, so that way I could sort of segment them. And that's why originally I had a separate table to, you know, to facilitate that more. But that's not a concern I have right now directly. And I can get pretty far with having category types be in a enum column on that table anyway. So yeah, that's sort of why I arrived at where we're at.
Personally, I would just make it a string, just call it a day.
Yeah, it's already in enums, man. Already in enum.
No, strings are the most flexible type. Put anything in a string.
Postgres Ecto. I don't want to put anything in it. I want to put...
No, but then with an enum, you have to do a migration for the type. Do you know how hard it is to migrate Postgres enums in Ecto? Look it up. It's a pain in the butt.
Yeah, it's pretty easy. We'll fight about it later. But the other thing, though, is that I wanted to I wanted to get closer to, again, like go look at different website, like all these different sites, like One Kings Lane, Perigold, Howes, Wayfair, like the category, the taxonomy is set up all of the same. And these sites are so big that vendors and people that sell furniture already are formatting their spreadsheets in a way that they can upload directly to these marketplaces. So if I can get my app closer to sort of, it's not a standard, it's not an official standard by any means, but closer to sort of the middle of the road standard, I thought that was probably worth the effort there as well.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get a majority of the products to fit into your system and figure out what to do with the ones that fall outside that, whether you create things on the fly or just kick them out to a human to categorize them by hand. Lots of different approaches there.
Yeah, exactly. And my first thought was that if a product couldn't match a category that's already existing, that it would go in, it basically, like, then it doesn't have a category. And so then in the inventory process for our team, they could just have an easy filter that they could see, show me all products that are uncategorized. And also we're storing the raw categories and tags and materials and stuff that come in with the CSV. So that way in that UI also, we could show this is what came in with it and they could see why it didn't match or if there was a close match. So that would allow us also to improve our system over time.
Cool, man. Well, it sounds like you've settled on a pretty good system. I just think it sounds like it needs a little more work on figuring out the details there, I guess, whether you want to stick with the recursive structure or use these materialized paths.
Yeah, the category matching really is the last piece there.
Yeah.
But it's a big piece. It's a really important piece. And looking at now, I mean, now that I'm looking at this L-tree documentation, it does give you a ton of operators. I feel like I could pretty confidently make a good solution with what they give you with L-tree. So I guess tomorrow I'm spinning up a new branch.
Do it.
I'll call it Categories 2.
It's not a branch, Sean. It doesn't have a parent. It's a materialized code change.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's what I've been up to.
That's it?
Yeah.
That's all?
It. That's it. It's been a long week already. It feels like it's been 2 weeks almost in the span of 1 week.
Yeah, I hear that, and I think that it's only gonna get longer in the coming months.
Minecraft's always here to cheer you up.
Man, I'm kind of pissed. I bought Minecraft for 10 euros back in 2012. And I was trying to get my account set up so I could play with you guys. And I went on to the... So apparently there's a Minecraft account, then there's the Mojang account, and then there's your Microsoft account. And that's like the progression of how these things went. So apparently I had a Minecraft account at one point. You had to migrate it to a Mojang account. I plugged in my email address and said, oh, you've already migrated. Okay. So I went to the Mojang account. I said, I don't remember my password. Send me a password reset, please. Nothing. So I think I might just have to shell out. I mean, you know, listen. Got my money's, my 10 euros worth out of Minecraft. I think I could probably pony up and buy it again for $26.95.
It's pretty relaxing. You just turn the... I mean, Minecraft's music is actually really good. It's the artist is C418, I believe. I'll put a link in the show notes. Really good sort of chill ambient music. But also what I do is turn the music off and then I put on YouTube, there's a playlist that I listen to called... Actually, it's not even a playlist. It's like a live channel. It's just music to study and listen, or like music to relax and study to. I'll just put that on and...
That's the best channel.
It is the best channel. And so I play Minecraft while listening to that. And yeah, basically we have DNC version 2. Paul and I will just talk tech and we're building villager train tracks and monster farms and AFK fishing machines and all sorts of interesting stuff.
Like I'm just scrolling through Reddit while I'm listening to you and a Minecraft picture shows up.
You're hooked. Got him.
All right.
You just got.
Notch, you could take my money again. It's fine.
But, yeah, I mean, my realm can only have 10 people on at one time, but if anyone hearing this wants to get it and get in on this, let me send me a Twitter message and I'll add you to the realm.
There's a admissions test though you have to pass.
Can you treat others like you would want to be treated?
I was going to say you have to name all of the L-tree operators and what they do.
I guess I have to remove myself from my own server. Oh, wait, I didn't know that L-tree has an actual text matcher, a text match operator. So you don't have to do the conversion. That's nice. This might be the way to go. Oh, man. But how can people find me on Twitter, Rockwell?
That's my cue, huh? Sean is Sean Washbot on Twitter. The show, DNC Cast, for all the latest, greatest, hot DNC news, hot takes on Minecraft. And I'm Shrockwell.
As always, you can head to dnc.show to check out the show notes. So we talked about a lot of SQL things today. I put links to the documentation and a couple of different articles as well that we didn't mention in there. So if you want to learn more about L-trees and materialized paths or common table expressions or anything like that, the links will be at the show notes at dnc.show.
We also post those over on spectrum.chat, where we're hanging out. You can come and say hi, ask any questions on there as well.
And as always, thanks to Spec for having us and putting us out there. We wouldn't be able to do this without you.
Hey guys, you're the best. You too, Sean.
Well, I guess I'll be seeing you on the blocks, right?
Yeah, I'm going to go do it. You know what? This is actually kind of the perfect game to play on to burn through a battery on my new MacBook. Just hang on the couch and burn up my wrists using the touchpad to play the game. I think that'd be sounds relaxing. All right, well, I'll see you soon.
All right, talk to you.